owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Many of you have heard the expression, "May you live in interesting times." You probably know that that phrase is dripping with irony. Those interesting times are not ones of peace and tranquility, but rather times of challenges and trouble. There's no debate we're indeed living in interesting times right now. Today we're going to talk about one particular subject that has been weighing heavy on my mind. As many of you know, I spent much of my childhood growing up in Latin America, coming to the U.S. when I was 9 years old. Much of my time was spent in the hard scrabble villages of the Oaxacan Highlands. Now, by Mexican standards, even on the salary of missionaries paid in U.S. dollars, it put our family comfortably in the middle class. However, through the lens of my childhood eyes, the United States was still the land of milk and honey. Everyone had a car. Everyone had a television. And there was as much ice cream as you could eat. I cannot blame anyone who would seek a better life in our nation. But all nations have borders. That's a simple geographic fact. For a nation to remain sovereign, it must have control over those borders. Our guest today is a regular subject matter expert called upon by national television and radio shows. He served in the United States Army and also spent over 20 years as a federal law enforcement agent. He has authored 2 books, Unwavering, A Border Agent's Journey, and Out of the Shadows. He's earned a bachelor's degree in law enforcement, a master's in forensic science, and a doctorate in strategic security. He's also the producer and host of the Protectors podcast. If you like American Warrior Radio, you definitely want to check out the Protectors. You can find that at protectors.buzzsprout.com. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Dr. Jason Piccolo.
Well, thanks for having me. That's a great intro, and I really appreciate it. I didn't realize you had such an in-depth background in Latin America, so I'm really looking forward to this talk today.
Well, I don't know if just growing up gives one an in-depth background, Jason. It's not like I'm an expert.
I think it does. You have the first-hand knowledge, and a lot of these young migrant children coming across probably at the same age as you were when you lived down there, so I'd love to talk about that.
Well, let's just say I've got an extra sensitivity to it, and leave it at that. Jason, you've had quite a varied career. We want to talk mostly about your ICE and Customs and Border Protection and some of your work in that area, but you also, I don't want to overlook your military career, you were deployed to Iraq as part of an anti-terrorism component of a Joint Special Operations Task Force.
I was. You know, my military career is a little varied. In the 1990s, I was enlisted active duty and reserves, artillery and human intelligence. Then I commissioned as an infantry officer. And then in 2005, I was recalled for a tour of duty in Iraq eventually. But prior to my deployment in Iraq, I spent some time before, during, and after Hurricane Katrina in Camp Shelby, Mississippi. So my training was a little varied. Did deploy to Iraq, and I was attached to the Special Operations Command as their anti-terrorism officer. So I do have a varied military career as well, so thanks for bringing that up.
Well, now, on the home front, and that's what we're going to be talking about mostly today, you also have lots of experience. You've disrupted everything from disrupting narco traffickers to an assignment to something I'd never even knew it existed, but apparently the White House has had a Security Council human smuggling cell.
Yeah, you know, when I was younger, I was enlisted. I did go through ROTC, and I planned on going back into the Army as an infantry officer. But instead, I picked up a job as a U.S. Border Patrol agent in San Diego. So that's where my career, and January of 2000 began, was on the southwest border, just next to San Diego in the Otay Mesa area and the Otay Mountain Range. So that was my first real, you know, encounter of the southwest border. And you know me, I grew up in a small town in New Jersey, so this was a definite eye-opener for me. So, yeah, my career has spent – I did spend a lot of time on the southwest border, and I also within Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Delaware and Philly and in Washington, D.C.
Now, that brings up a good point because, Jason, I'm thinking so often when people think about Border Patrol, they just think about the borders. They're not aware of all the other activities that are taking place inside, you know, in the heartland, if you will, of the U.S. as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the U.S. Border Patrol has 16,000-plus agents on the southwest border, but there are roughly, I believe, around 30,000 agents spread out throughout the country, including their headquarters components. And, you know, Customs and Border Protection isn't just the Border Patrol. You have Customs and Protection at the airports, the CBP officers. There's a lot of different components of Customs and Border Protection.
Now let's
mobile units.
Yeah, let's not overlook the fruit and bug nerds.
Yeah, the Department of Agriculture. Yes. I don't know who they fall under right now. I got to look into them. So anybody who's bringing produce and fruit and everything across the southwest borders or through the ports of entry, whether that's an airport or not, will encounter those. That's for sure.
You know, you're too young to remember, Jason, but back in the olden days when I was growing up, you actually had to stop at the state border, and there were inspection stations. They'd ask you, you know, are you bringing any dates out of California or, I don't know, smuggling yams from wherever yams come from? I don't remember. Now those places are all boarded up, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. It's definitely the interesting times. I like how you brought that up in your intro.
Now,
the border has changed even since the 90s when I first went down there.
So what?
Check it out.
And I tell you, I love the name of your podcast, the Protectors. What inspired a kid from New Jersey to want to become a protector himself? Was it just, I mean, you just great recruiter, or you just all along wanted to help people?
I just always wanted to be in the military, and I always wanted to be a police officer. Since as far as I could. I can't even remember when I didn't want to be in the military, at least. And, you know, in New Jersey, trying to become a police officer was like one of those impossible feats. It seems like you had to know someone. So I really, my first step was, hey, you know what? When I was 20, I was kicking around a lot, and I was like, I got to do it. So I joined the Army. And after I got out of the Army, I really didn't know if I wanted to try to become a police officer or I wanted to go into the Fed system. My best friend went in the U.S. Border Patrol. I had no idea what the U.S. Border Patrol was. When he went in, I joined the Border Patrol after college, and I ended up in the same station with him in San Diego. And we're both like, wow, here we are. Now we're Border Patrol agents, and now this is nothing like I expected it to be. So it was definitely an eye-opener, definitely. And, yes, I have always wanted to have something to do in the protectors community. And that is something, that's why I started the podcast. I'm sure we'll run into that later on during the conversation, but there are so many people out there that want to help others. And a protector community has gone way beyond just being law enforcement, way beyond just being military and emergency responders to those who want to just protect their family and protect their neighbors. So it's a really cool thing.
Now, Jason, do you prefer the phrase protector versus sheepdog, or do you use them interchangeably?
I don't really use the sheepdog. I don't know why. I just never really got into using the sheepdog. Protector just seems more relevant and more along the lines of, you know, sheepdog to me means there's a wolf. They're going to go out there. They're going to track, and they're going to hunt that wolf. Now, me, you know, as a protector, I feel like, you know, especially when it comes to protecting your house and your home, you're not actively out there looking for the wolf. Your awareness is up. Yes, you're ready for when they do come to your front door, but you're not actively out there. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense to you or not, but I really prefer the term protector over sheepdog. But there's nothing wrong with, you know, being an alpha sheepdog.
Sure, I understand. I'm neither. How's that? Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're talking with Dr. Jason Piccolo. We're going to be talking more about the border. You can learn more. Visit jasonpiccolo.us. That's PICCOLO.US. When we come back, we're going to just kind of maybe get Jason's perspective on the, you know, a day in the life of a Border Patrol agent. Ladies and gentlemen, our U.S. border with Mexico is 1,954 miles. To give you some perspective, that's the equivalent of driving from Washington, D.C. straight through to Salt Lake City. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Dr. Jason Piccolo. Jason has 20-plus years as a federal law enforcement agent, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the border. Now, Jason, I've read that we might be expecting a sudden surge of Canadians seeking refuge from draconian COVID restrictions, but let's focus on the southern border. I mentioned just the scope of what we're talking about here, just the geography alone is pretty challenging. I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to go out for the day with the CBP Air and Marine Unit, and we flew pretty much just the southern border, the Arizonan border, and I tell you what, what an eye-opening experience. I mean, there's a lot of rough country out there, particularly as we get closer to California. And there's nothing there but a barbed wire fence, but it is just harsh, harsh country. And I can't imagine being out there alone in a truck or maybe on horseback, and help is a long ways away. What is that like, a day for a Border Patrol agent, Jason?
You know, I like how you brought up the analogy of Washington and Utah. I usually tell people that the southwest border is like driving from Maine to Miami. It's that long. Mm-hmm. So when you think of how much wall or fence you would need and how much resources you would need to cover that whole area, it just kind of boggles your mind. And when you're saying the day in the life of a U.S. Border Patrol agent is so varied, because you only have roughly 16,000 agents for the southwest border. And that's 24/7, 365-day coverage. And that's not including taking people out for management positions or leave or anything else. So you really are in these austere environments by yourself a lot of times. What is a typical day? I keep in contact with a lot of former friends. No, I shouldn't say former friends, but a lot of friends from my former life in the Border Patrol. And it can be different. It can be one day to be sitting in the stationary area, watching the fence, make sure no one crosses in certain geographic areas. One day you could be out there by yourself, tracking out a group of who knows how many, from anywhere from 1 to 100. You just don't know how many you're going to be tracking. And then the other thing, too, is you never know if you're going to encounter someone that's armed, you know, especially in the middle of the night, out there on your own, not necessarily with night vision devices, and you're out there just kind of tracking around and looking. The thing is, you don't know what you're going to encounter. Are you going to encounter a family with, you know, young children? Are you going to encounter a backpacker with dope on her back? Are you going to encounter someone from another country? You have no idea what they're speaking. Are some people coming from other areas of the world who are coming for illicit means? So you never know what you're going to encounter. And that's what the day in the life of a Border Patrol agent is. You just don't know what you're going to see or what you're going to do.
Now, Jason, I'm glad you brought that up, because so much of what we see today focuses on the humanitarian aspect of the border. But we're also talking real, sincerely, genuine bad guys. You know, they might be terrorists. They might be people who wish us ill. Certainly you've got drug and human smuggling going on, all kinds of stuff that comes across the border that we also, by the way, if your hands weren't full enough, got to keep an eye out for those guys too.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I try not to be an alarmist, but the reality of the border is a lot of times you get low-hanging fruit, a lot of times you get the backpacker dope guys, but let's say you found someone from another area of the world that has terrorist ties, and they know what they're doing, and they know how to blend in, and they know how to work the border system itself, including the legal system, you don't know what you're going to get. I always tell people, watch lists are great if you're on a watch list. Vetting is great if you have something to vet. But a lot of the traffic from Africa, from the Middle East, from everywhere, transits out of their areas into Brazil and comes up the southwest border through the southwest corridor trafficking areas up to the southwest border. Now, if you've never been encountered by law enforcement or the intelligence agencies, you wouldn't have a record. So who knows, let's say you're coming from Somalia You make it up to the southwest border. You encounter a Customs and Border Protection officer if you're at a POE or a Border Patrol agent, and you go to claim asylum, and they run your fingerprints, they run your data, and there's nothing in the system. That doesn't mean you're clean. That doesn't mean you're non-criminal. It doesn't mean you don't have ties to terrorists. It just means that there's no record of it. So you don't know what's coming through that southwest border. And sometimes you do hit on people who have red notices and who have notices from Interpol that are wanted for murder, for war crimes, or for whatever. That's the reality of southwest border. Yes, you can look at the humanitarian crisis that's going on right now. I love talking about the unaccompanied alien children, unaccompanied migrant children, however you want to phrase that, coming across the southwest border, because the numbers are up over 163% on the southwest border right now.
Let's talk about that in a second, if you don't mind. I really want to give people, because if they're not, obviously you've got the experience. I'm fortunate to be based out of a part of the country where, you know, we're close to the border. And I tell you another story, because you're a podcaster, you know about the power of storytelling. I went up with the air unit, but I also spent some time with the ground unit. And we were about, I don't know, not very far, maybe 20 miles out of a major border town. We're coming up over a hill, and I look down, and on the U.S. side of the border, here's these three people sitting, or four, one, two, three, or five people sitting in a circle. And at first I thought it almost looked like a family having a picnic, but it was, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, we pull up. It turns out there are five Chinese nationals, three men, two women. They're all scratched up. They've got maybe half a bottle of water between them. And again, they're maybe 75 yards inside the there wasn't even a fence at that place. And they surrendered. And I'll never forget the border. He couldn't take them into custody because he had me riding along with him, Jason. But he went into his lunchbox and he had a bottle of Gatorade and he gave them their water. You know, neither one of us spoke Chinese, so we had to wait for another unit to come along. So I'm thinking, that's compassionate, that's really wonderful, but then it hit me, wait a minute, if five Chinese nationals can just saunter across the border, you know, that's
yes,
pretty porous.
Absolutely. You know, all these stats are, if you go to the CBP.gov, the stats are right there. This isn't like hidden information. You're going to see that, you know, there's a huge influx from Guatemala, Mexico, Honduras. But then there's other than Mexicans. There's other countries that are so many thousands and thousands from other countries that know if they make it to the southwest border, they just have to come in, claim asylum, see an asylum officer. And the asylum officer, lots of times, 90% of the time, 85-90% of the time, will err on the side of caution and give them their date in court. Now you have catch and release, meaning you catch them, you're going to release them until they go to see an immigration court. So just for the audience out there, the immigration court is filled with 460 to 490 at any given time immigration judges that work for a completely separate agency. They're under the Department of Justice. That's 400. Let's give them the high numbers of 490. Right now, there's close to 1 million backlogged immigration cases. All of this massive influx coming across the southwest border right now get to have their day in court as well. You can't deport someone unless, for one, they request a voluntary return or an expedited return. But if they say, hey, you know what, I want to see an immigration judge, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be released into the public, and it's on their own onus to go to that immigration court hearing.
Jason,
anybody from these countries? Yeah.
Well, here's what I don't get. Again, I'm just a dumb civilian, but a million case backlog, how did we get there? I mean, is it as simple as we just need to hire some more darn judges, or is part of that backlog people who are still on the docket but are never going to show up?
Well, you know, that's part of it. You are going to have the ones that are on a docket that never show up. The other thing is you could file appeals. You could file appeals and appeals and appeals. My first job when I went back to ICE after my deployment, I did work for DOD for a bit, and I eventually returned to ICE. I was a deportation officer, and that's where I manned the docket. I manned alternatives to detention. So I have a lot of visibility on the ankle monitors and the monitoring. But then I went on to run the fugitive operations for all of Delaware as a supervisor. And the thing is, I only had a finite – I had 13 staff that were, you know, sworn to be able to go out and apprehend those with final orders of removal for all of Delaware. So at any one time, you know, you could have how many people on a docket. And we focus primarily on criminals. So you have so many people that are in the system that are criminals. So, I mean, it's just the immigration system is completely broken. I could talk about that all day long. But what I do tell every legislator I talk to or anybody I talk to is throw out the immigration system as we have, trying to reform the entire thing. Take pieces of it and reform it. If you want to reform the immigration judge system, hire more judges. Streamline the hiring process. Recruit and retain judges that are going to be able to work and clear that docket. The other thing, too, is you have to look at, hey, you want to have DACA, you want to have the Dreamers Act, you want to do all this stuff, focus on one problem at a time. Mm-hmm. Our Southwest border is completely broken right now. Numbers are up. I was going to say for single males coming across the border is 280% up from the same time last year. They're still going to have their day in court. They're still going to be returned. You have to focus on what are the priorities right now.
Jason, we've got to take a break. When we come back, I do want to talk about those unaccompanied children and particularly human smuggling and trafficking, because that's another issue I'm very sensitive about. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the numbers for you. I did Googleize it. For this fiscal year, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, now this is just the southwestern border, 550,410 encounters. Of those, 410,460 were single adults, 92,308 family unit apprehensions. And coming up, we're going to talk about those 47,642 unaccompanied minors. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Dr. Jason Piccolo about our southern border and what's going on down there. Jason, another quick story, if you'll allow me. Years ago, for about a decade, I volunteered with a group called Stand Up for Kids. And our role was to go out and help and find and help homeless teens and street kids. And there was one evening, I'll never forget, there was a young lady who was 16. She looks like she was 13, maybe 90 pounds dripping wet. She was on the streets and she was clearly in trouble. We spent 6 hours with her that night just to make sure we could get her someplace safe and off the streets, because I knew full well that if we could find her and recognize her situation, the wolves out there could as well. And she was really, really potentially in trouble. We both had the folks from the Deliver Fund on our show, and folks, I'd encourage you to look up the Deliver Fund and learn more about their programs. What is it about human trafficking that, I know you heard my story, Jason, why does it resonate so much with you?
You know, man, anybody out there, deliverfund.org, they really are the tip of the spear. They really are out there doing real work. They're not a vigilante group. What they do is they use law enforcement analytics, i.e. the computer, to help law enforcement go and get these wolves. I am so glad you called them what they are. They're wolves, they're demons, they're predators. I cannot stand traffickers. And why does it resonate so much with me? Well, you know, I did work for that human smuggling cell. A lot of people didn't realize that, you know, the influx of the children coming across the border started roughly in 2011, 2012, with multiple thousands coming across our southwest border. Thousands and thousands. So they created this DHS, Human Smuggling Cell, as part of the White House Security Councils, and they put about 13 or 14 of us in there from Customs Border Protection, from DHS, from all the different components, including ICE, where I was coming from. And our goal was to stop the human smuggling of children specifically coming across the southwest border. And that does include traffickers. And what I saw was so many of these little kids coming across the Southwest border. And later on in my career, I found out a lot of them were getting shuttled through our system, the U.S. government, off to what they call sponsors. And a lot of these sponsors turned out to be criminals. And I kept thinking to myself, how many of these children end up in the hands of traffickers? When I was working for that sale, my kids were 6 and 8 at the time. So, when I came home and I saw that, looking at my kids and going, oh, my gosh, I can't imagine my kids ended up in the hands of traffickers. So since that point, I've really focused a lot of my efforts on talking to and documenting and writing about trafficking. Now my primary goal is to talk about girls just like you saw on the street, young girls who are being trafficked within our own borders. So trafficking isn't just what you think. It isn't just coming across the Southwest borders through airports from Slavic countries in shipping containers. It's happening in our neighborhoods right now.
Well, and that's what's interesting. If folks visit I'm glad you mentioned that, deliverfund.org. Look at some of the data on their website. Anywhere from 100,000 to 150,000 victims are currently being held in the U.S. as commercial sex slaves. And those are U.S. citizens being trafficked by U.S. citizens. That doesn't even account for, to me, it's almost like we're approaching that perfect storm, Jason, with now all these unaccompanied minors. For goodness sakes, you got smugglers that are advertising on Facebook. Human smugglers. Yeah. And these guys, they're no dummies. They might be bad guys, but they're no dummies. And I can't imagine someone aren't thinking, just like you said, wait a minute, there's 43,000, 47,000 unaccompanied minors in these holding facilities. Hey, I'll just claim to be their uncle or their, fourth cousin or whatever. And next thing you know, there's a whole new pipeline of these victims. And who are they going to tell?
Yeah, let's back it up with data. A lot of people don't realize this data is provided by the U.S. government. It's out there right now. 47,000 from October to right now in this fiscal year. That's what they call it. Same last year, I think it was roughly 18% or 20%. It's gone up so much higher since then. They say that, let's say, unaccompanied minors, anybody under 18 who's not traveling with an adult, a familial adult, or a guardian. Out of that, 36% are young, tender age, I call them, anybody under 11 or 12. That is a lot of children that come across and are funneled through our systems. And let me explain the system for everybody out there. A child comes across the border, and they're unaccompanied, meaning there's no family with them. An adult brings them to the border, drops them off on this side of the border, and the adult's gone. The Customs and Border Protection takes that child, ICE, processes them, ICE takes them, transports them to a Health and Human Services facility, who then transfers them to a sponsor facility, who will then release them to a sponsor. Now, sponsors were getting vetted before. They were getting their fingerprints done. They were getting their criminal history checks done. And that's when we found out that a lot of them were criminals. Now the sponsors aren't even being vetted. So you're getting multiple thousands of these kids in the hands of anybody coming in to claim them who says, hey, I'm a good person. I'm here to bring that child into my custody and raise them until they go to their...
Why? I'm sorry. Why are they not being vetted? What's changed? Is it money? Is it overload?
It's complete overload. Now, if anybody Googles Jason Pickle, you'll see Jason Pickle, a whistleblower. And one of the things I blew the whistle on was the Obama administration releasing the young children to criminals. One really big positive that came out of my whistleblowing was that unaccompanied migrant children, their sponsors would have to be fingerprinted and they would have to be, criminal history checks would have to be done. I worked with Senator Charles Grassley and his crew. We made sure that was happening. March of this year, the current administration, and we're not going to get into politics, this is the facts, stopped vetting, stopped taking criminal histories, and stopped asking any data whether or not they're alienage, and they stopped running criminal history checks on these sponsors coming in to pick up the children. So now we have no idea, for one, are these sponsors really the children's familial relations? Because I don't know about you. You mentioned living in that community until you were 9 years old. 9 years old is old compared to a lot of these kids coming across the Southwest border. A 2 or 3 year old who's never really seen their parents or their family coming across the Southwest border will not be able to determine who's picking them up and taking them into their custody.
Sure.
I'd ask everybody to look for a video. It's about 5-6 weeks old now, of a smuggler dropping 2 kids, I believe they were 3 and 5, over the Southwest border fence, and the smugglers run away. So they're literally taking these children and dropping them across the border. And people are asking, well, why? What kid is going to come across the Southwest border? And what parent is going to have their child smuggled across the border? One word is amnesty. The optics and metrics down south in South America right now is if you get a foothold in the United States right now, you're going to have amnesty eventually granted. Whether or not that happens, I don't know.
And Jason, a lot of these, I've got to say, I understand it. I get it. I mean, you know, I think in Latin America, don't quote me on this, but I mean, it's got one of the highest murder rates of any non-country at war. You know, with COVID, work was hard enough to find down there. Now it's probably 100 times worse. You had a couple hurricanes that came in and completely destroyed towns. Well, those folks are out of work. So I get it. And it breaks my heart to think of a parent saying, you know what, I'm gonna give up my child in just hopes that they'll have a better life. And that should break everyone's heart. But you're right. That video, I mean, those kids, how tall is that wall? It's 20. It's a tall wall, and God bless those little tots. They got up and started walking for a minute there. But how is this supposed to work, Jason?
I tell you what, I agree. My heart breaks, and I understand economic migration. I do, believe me. If anybody's for economic migration and changing the way of life down in South America and Central America, it's me. Why is this happening, and what can be done better? We had 17 in the last count I looked, embassies and consulate facilities down in Central America. If we really need to stop this migrant crisis, is we need to start working amnesty at these facilities we have down south.
Yeah.
We also need to deploy resources to the southern border. Yes, we can send, right now there's a push for Office of Personnel Management to send federal agents and employees down to the Southwest border to help with the migrant children. But the problem with that is the draw is still going to be there. Unless you get rid of that draw, unless you come up with some way to reform the immigration system, there's going to be more children. That border is bloody and deadly. You know that. Just as well as I do. You see it. Think about it. If you go, a little kid in the middle of the desert is going to die. And a lot of times people don't realize that when you come across the Southwest border, you lay up during the day, meaning you find a bush, you crawl under it. When you die of exposure, nobody's ever going to find you. So we have no idea how many thousands have died.
We're finding those bodies out there all the time, and it's hard. Jason, we got one more break. We come back. I'm going to propose Ben's solution for this problem. I'd like to hear your take on it, and then we'll finish up with that. I want to talk a little bit more about your podcast as well. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, joined by Dr. Jason Piccolo. You can find out more at jasonpiccolo.us, P-I-C-C-O-L-O. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Dr. Jason Piccolo. You can learn more at jasonpiccolo, P-I-C-C-O-L-O. .us. Got a great podcast up there. We're going to talk about that in just a second, Jason. But one other question, because, you know, I mean, you're the expert and I'm not. Ben usually gets at least a couple of dumb questions every show. But let's best case scenario. I'm a parent. I brokenheartedly have to make the sacrifice. I decide I'm going to take my child up and deliver them on the other side of the border and let them claim amnesty. I probably wouldn't do that unless there's some other family member here in the U.S. But in that situation, Jason, what happens to those children who nobody shows up to claim them? I mean, do they just become wards of the state till they're 18, or what? Or has nobody thought about that?
No, they actually get to see an immigration judge, and then don't ask me how that's going to work when you got a little kid. how are they going to plead for their case? They do offer free immigration services, i.e., like they'll give you a list of people who will come in and help you. But the thing is, these are little kids. They are basically going to go to a sponsor, and who knows what's going to happen to them. And that's where my concern is. A lot, you know what? When this started happening, Senator Grassley's office found out that kids were ending up in labor trafficking instances because people, it's not just sex.
Right.
You're finding, like, kids working in labor farms and factories and everywhere they're going to use them up, and they're going to spit them out. So it's like sex, it's labor, it's everything. I really want the audience to realize that evil does exist. There are, you mentioned the wolves, I mentioned the protectors, sheepdogs. There are very, very evil people out there that look at human beings as commerce. They don't have the same moral compass as us. They will sell a child at 2 to 3 years old to be used for sex over and over and over again until they can't use them anymore, and then they discard them. They'll use teenagers, and this is happening domestically. It's internationally. It's globally. Trafficking, modern-day slavery, is probably close to $200 billion a year. It is a lot easier to traffic a body than it is to traffic a kilo of cocaine across the Southwest border. If you traffic a kilo of cocaine across the Southwest border, when that's up, you got to go back and get another one. If you're trafficking the body across the border, to these evil people out there, it's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
They can use that body over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So just remember that these are evil people.
Well, and another fact, the Laredo sector, I think they said just recently, 5 MS-13 gang members in 7 days. And, you know, I think about those kids. If I never get picked up, let's say I'm a young male, I'm probably going to be pretty angry growing up here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Guess who's going to recruit me?
Yeah.
So it's a bad situation. Well, again, folks, please visit Jason's website, jasonpiccolo.us, to find out more. You know, take a look at our friends over there at the Deliver Fund. Amazing stuff there. It will break your heart, but there is something you can do to help. Jason, I don't want to, you know, part of the reason you came to us is through our friends at Heroes Media Group. Your podcast really, The Protectors, it really is sort of, and I mean it, if people like American Warrior Radio, they're definitely going to like your podcast as well. It's pretty much in the same vein as the guests we have on here. In fact, we've had a lot of crossover guests, not just the Deliver Fund. One of my favorite guests of all time. He's so good. I had him on twice, Jason, you had as well, Dale Dye. What a peach of an interview he is. But what can people, what should they be looking for? What can they hear? And why should they, when they're done listening to American Warrior Radio, go to the Protectors podcast?
After you've subscribed to America's Warrior Radio, head over to the Protectors. 220-something interviews so far, anywhere from Jack Carr to Brad Taylor to Brad Thor to any author you can imagine in the thriller genre, including nonfiction books as well. Tons of special forces, from Delta operators to SEAL teams to everywhere you can imagine. Everyday heroes have been on, NFL players have been on, actors, everybody. Anybody that's a protector. And a protector is your military, your veterans, your emergency responders, and those that support them. And like I said before, a protector is you. You are now your family's protector, and you're your own protector. So check us out. My books, I also have 2 books. They are priced per cost because I don't make money on the podcast. I don't make money on books. I just have a day job. I'm good. I write because I want people to know what's going on. So check out, I have a bunch of articles about trafficking on Washington Examiner and townhall.com. Check those out. And really, please follow deliverfund.org before you follow anything else.
I agree. They are. And just so folks know, these are not, you know, when you look at the background of the founders, I mean, these are, they've got some special forces guys that go out, but, you know, a lot of them are kind of sort of techno nerds. And really, they're using the power of the Internet that the bad guys use against them. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're in law enforcement out there, they offer these services free of charge to any law enforcement agency out there who could use their help. And the reason they can do that is because folks like Jason and I support them, and you should too. But just a fascinating story there as well. Jason, real quick, I love what you said about immigration because, and I was 9 years old. We came in, obviously, my parents are both U.S. citizens, so it wasn't that tough. But I do remember as a child looking at my hands, and they were just dark, dark blue from all the fingerprint ink. And, of course, there was all the shots and all the stuff we had to do to me and my brothers had to do to come into the United States. But so I'm not as smart as you, but to me it should be this simple. Establish those satellite offices that you're talking about. They can go there. They criminal background check, blood test, just to make sure you don't have hepatitis or the bubonic plague or whatever, something that we don't want crossing our border. See, establish that you have a relative legally in the United States. And, you know, need just kind of a sense of what your skill set is so we know you're going to be able to find work. It shouldn't be any harder than that, should it? I mean, we're talking maybe a day of processing.
Yeah. You know, we have metrics of how many we could have over here and stuff. We got to do something. You know, we can't just blindly say it's a right or left thing. There really does need to be somewhere to meet in the middle. I'm going to leave it off with this and say, get the people on the ground, get the ground truth, the Border Patrol agents, the immigration people, everybody on the ground, and find out what the real deal is and find a solution. You're not going to find that solution in Washington, D.C.
Boy, you said a mouthful there. One quick thing, given your military experience, to what extent is there other technology we should be using down there? I mean, clearly we can't hire enough people to cover every square mile of that border, but what technology should we be using, Jason, that we're not really using as much right now?
Well, you know, believe it or not, a wall does work. And I don't mean a wall over all 19,000 miles. I mean to funnel the traffic into areas where you could put the drones, you could put the seismic sensors, you could put infrared technology, you could put people. You need areas. You need to funnel the traffic. You know, you live in Arizona, there is literally, and when you talk about barbed wire fence, we're talking strands of barbed wire.
Yeah.
We're not talking 20 feet. We're talking strands. I am coming out to the southwest border at the end of May and June, and I'm going to take a look at it firsthand and kind of give some input. I'd love to link up.
All right. Well, Jason, thanks for spending some time with our listeners today. We truly appreciate it. Again, folks, visit jasonpicklow.us, P-I-C-C-O-L-O.us. You can find his books there. You can find the podcast there. He's even got some really, really cool swag that you can buy as well. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find this podcast and over 250 others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Any of the most popular podcast platforms, Amazon, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, you can find us there. Please listen to these messages and share them with others out there in our communities who need to hear them. I'd really appreciate it. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.